Okay, so I'm very happy to be able to share this evening with you. It's my first trip to Australia, and when I lived in India, I met many Australians, but it's my first time to actually be here, so it's very nice. Tonight we'll be talking about depression and anxiety, unless I'm too depressed to give the talk. Or maybe I'm too anxious, and you know. And then tomorrow we'll be following up on that, talking about joy and adversity. What I found interesting today is that Miffy said that many more people signed up for the talk on depression and anxiety than on joy and courage. And I thought, oh, that's very indicative, because when you're depressed, you look at the negative side, you know, the depression and anxiety, and you forget that there's joy and courage. Yeah? So the two talks are kind of on the same topic, or similar topics, approached from different angles, but it's quite interesting, isn't it, how our mind first goes to our problem, and then has trouble getting up out of our problem to see something in a more positive light. So this evening we'll start off with some meditation, and then I'll give a talk, and then we'll have some time for Q&A. I always like to start out with some meditation because we've all had busy days and we need some time just to settle down, let our body settle, let our mind settle. And also because meditation is one of the antidotes to anxiety and depression. So it'll be a little bit of training in the antidote that we want to learn, right? So there's different kinds of meditation. Some kinds of meditation are designed to help us stabilize our mind and develop concentration, and other kinds of meditation are designed to help us explore and understand a topic. So this evening we're going to do the first kind of meditation that helps us stabilize and calm the mind. So we'll be using the breath as the object of our meditation. There's many objects of meditation, you know, to stabilize the mind. But here we'll be using the breath because it's a completely neutral object. You don't need to be a Buddhist to be able to meditate with the breath as your object. You don't need to have any special belief systems or anything. All you need to do is breathe. So please continue to do that. Okay, don't stop. And what we don't force our breath in this meditation. We just let the breathing be normal and natural. But we place our attention on the breath, either at the upper lip and the nostrils, feeling the sensation of the wind, of the breath as it goes in and out, or you can place it on your belly and feel the rise and fall of your belly. Your belly should be going out when you inhale, okay? And I say this because lots of times when we're anxious, we don't breathe from our belly, we breathe from our chest. When we breathe up here in these short kind of breaths, our belly actually goes in when we inhale. Okay, and so then the air doesn't have a chance to get into our lungs. Okay, in fact, we can try a little experiment here right now. Put one hand on your belly and one hand on your chest. Okay, now breathe just from the top of your chest, like when you're anxious. Yeah, so that your chest goes out. Kind of short breaths. Are they short breaths? Yeah? They feel kind of uncomfortable, don't they? Yeah? Now breathe so that your belly goes out. So your hand down here should feel your belly go out when you breathe in. So your diaphragm should be moving down as you inhale. You feeling the difference? Yeah? Can you feel that more air comes in when you're breathing from here? Yeah? And can you see also how your breathing pattern relates to your mental state? When you're breathing up here, how does your mind feel? What's your mental state? My mind feels quite tight, you know, because it's just moving up here a little bit. It's hard to get the air in. Breathe from down here now. Does your mental state feel different? It does, doesn't it? Yeah, because when you're breathing from down here, the breaths are longer and they're deeper. And so when you breathe that way, automatically your mind calms down. Yeah? So our breath and our mental states are very related. So here, when we're doing the breathing meditation, we want to make sure that we're breathing from down here. Okay? Because meditation shouldn't make us anxious. Yeah? It should help us relax our mind. While we're using the breath as our object of meditation, we want to keep our attention on the breath. Of course, we have this monkey mind that likes to go all over the place, you know, and be everywhere except where it's supposed to be, and doing everything except what we're doing right now. Okay? So if your mind gets distracted, maybe you hear a sound, maybe your knee itches, you know, maybe you remember something that happened at work today. Instead of letting your mind go with that thought or that sound or sensation and make a story, bring your mind back to the breath. Okay? So it's like having a little kid that runs away and you bring him back and he runs away and you bring him back and eventually he learns to stay put. Okay, but we have to keep bringing the mind back. Because if we don't, what happens is one little sensation or sound or thought will cascade into a whole parade of conceptuality. Okay? So you're sitting there meditating, doing fine, and then you hear the door open. Okay? So what we should do is just say, oh, sound, come back to the breath. Okay? If we don't, it's like, oh, somebody's opening the door. Wonder who that is. Why are they coming in here late anyway? Can't they get anywhere on time? You know, all these people I work with, they just don't seem to be able to get anywhere on time. In fact, our whole office, everything is late. We are so unorganized. And, you know, everything in this country works like that. I mean, how do we even manage to sustain? We're so unorganized. We can't get anything to do. We can't work together. This whole thing is like such a mess. Okay? And all of that comes about because we heard a sound. Yeah? In Tibetan, there's this one word, it's called namtok, okay? There's not a good English translation to it. But what it means is this proliferation of garbage thoughts, okay? You know? I like that word proliferation, don't you? You know, for how our mind proliferates all kinds of rubbish ways of thinking, yeah? So instead of letting the mind just go off on its proliferation trips, we just know we heard a sound, come back to the breath, that's the end of it, okay? So we try real hard to stay with the breath and not create dramas. Because we're very good at creating dramas, aren't we? Yeah. But here we're not creating dramas, we're staying with our breath. Okay? So I will lead you through a little body relaxation where we'll just check our body and release tension. And then we'll spend a few minutes just breathing normally and naturally. But remember, you know, breathe from down here. And let the mind become peaceful and tranquil as you keep it on one object, in this case, the breath. Okay? Okay, so you can put your hands, usually what we do is our hands are the right on the left and the thumbs touching, and that's in our lap, and sit up straight. And then our head is just level. And lower your eyes. And begin by feeling yourself sitting here on the chair or on the cushion. Be aware of your body sitting here. And you're inside your body, so to speak. So you're not watching yourself. You're being here. And then become aware of sensations in your feet and your legs. If there's any tension there, then let that go. Then be aware of sensations in your belly and your lower abdomen. Some people store their stress in their belly, and their belly's tight, or they have butterflies in their tummy. If that's the case with you, really try and let your belly relax. Then be aware of sensations in your back, shoulders, arms, and chest. Some people store their tension in their back and shoulders. If you're one of them, try lifting your shoulders up towards your ears as high as you can get them. Tuck your chin in a little bit. Hold it for a moment. And then let your shoulders fall very fast. And that's quite good for releasing tension in the shoulders. Then become aware of sensations in your neck, jaw, and face. Let your facial muscles relax and make sure your jaw is also at ease. And so your physical posture is firm and also relaxed at the same time. And now turn your attention to your breath and watch it either at the upper lip and the nostrils or at your belly. And be interested in what's happening. Observe each in-breath. Observe each out-breath. And observe what it feels like if there's a pause between one breath and the next. So we'll have a few moments of silence to do that. And if your mind gets distracted, just gently but firmly bring it back and focus it again on the breath as you inhale and exhale. And now let's take a moment and cultivate our motivation. And think that we will listen and share together this evening so that we can discover and enhance our good qualities and our talents. And we want to do that so that we can make a positive contribution to society and to the welfare of all other living beings. And so develop that joyful mind of self-confidence that has compassion for all living beings and wants to transform our own mind so that we can be of greater and greater benefit to each and every living being. So I think that's my purpose for being here this evening. And then slowly open your eyes and come out of your meditation. So always at the beginning of any activity, whether it's waking up in the morning and beginning the day or within the day beginning an activity like, a Dharma talk or something like this, we always start by looking at our motivation and by deliberately cultivating a good motivation, because our motivation, our intention, is the chief thing that's going to determine the value of what we're doing. Okay? So we start out by looking inside and what kind of thoughts are going on inside of me, what kind of emotions are going on inside of me, because that is going to really determine the value of what I do. And usually in our lives, we aren't very much in touch with what our motivation is. Usually we have an impulse in the mind, and words come out of our mouth, and we're kind of in a tizzy, okay? And sometimes we find ourselves in situations and saying, how did I get here? What am I doing? And sometimes we find ourselves saying words. I find myself sometimes saying something, and one part of my mind is saying, children, shut up. You know, you don't really want to be saying this. Just be quiet. And the words keep coming out. Yeah? And so all this happens because we're not aware of what our motivation is. And instead, we kind of live on automatic. Whatever intention comes in the mind, we just follow it indiscriminately without stopping and being aware of what that thought was and where it's going to take us. Okay? So one of the first things we do to really start changing our lives and getting to know ourselves is to start taking stock of our motivations. Okay? Why am I doing what I'm doing? And so usually our motivation is we're doing what we're doing because we're trying to be happy and not suffer. Don't you think? Isn't that kind of our basic bottom line motivation on a day-to-day basis? Is I want to be happy and I don't want to suffer. Yeah. So that's kind of there at the bottom. You know, bottom line motivation? But then sometimes our way of achieving happiness and avoiding suffering involves other kind of motivations. And then those motivations lead to actions. So sometimes, for example, we might have the bottom line motivation, I want to be happy, and getting that new flat screen TV would really make me happy. But I don't want to pay that much for it. So I wonder how else I could get a flat screen TV without having to pay very much money. Now, could I accidentally on purpose wander off with it? Could I hint so that somebody else gets me one? No? And so our mind starts conniving, but it's operating under the influence of greed. No? And then that greed could lead us to lie to somebody so that we can get the money to buy the TV, or it could lead us to taking the TV without letting anybody know. So it could, you know, that kind of motivation of greed could lead us into all sorts of actions that then bring problems in our life, and that then we don't feel good about ourselves for having done those actions. Okay, are you with me? Yeah? Or we might have the bottom line motivation of wanting to be happy and not suffer. But then anger comes up and, gee, that person at my office today criticized me. They blame me for not being part of the teamwork, but I've been working really hard. Who do they think they are to criticize me? I've been working so hard. Nobody appreciates me, this whole place. And you know, we're getting pretty revved up about it. And then of course, what comes out of our mouth? You know, beep, 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 you know, a bunch of four-letter words and a few other things, you know, to voice our anger and frustration at somebody. Okay, and so there, anger has come in because we want to be happy and not suffer, but the anger is coming in and actually creating more suffering for us, because when we exaggerate the negativity of something and then dump our anger at a colleague at work, what kind of result do we get from that? We've done it. What kind of result do we get? Not a good one. Okay. So while anger pretends to be our friend and make us happy, when we let it take charge of our life, it creates problems for us. Okay? Now, you might by this time going, wait a minute, I came here to hear about depression and anxiety, and why is she talking so much about emotions, about motivation? You know, I want to hear about depression. I want to hear about anxiety. Actually, our motivations are involved with depression and anxiety. Yeah? Because our motivations are simply the different thoughts, the different intentions that we have in our mind. And when we don't think in a really clear and healthy way, then we wind up getting either anxious or depressed or any other variety of emotions that are not particularly comfortable. Okay? So, for example, when we get anxious, I know when I look in my own mind, when I get anxious, you know, I want to be happy, don't want to suffer, but my mind is very much either in the past or in the future, and it's dreaming up horror stories. Yeah, when I get anxious, it's like, oh, that happened in the past. Oh no, what are they going to think of me? How could I have said that? I'm going to see that person again, then they're not going to like me. Oh, you know? Or, you know, thinking in the future, oh, I have to do this presentation at work. How am I going to do it? Maybe I'm going to botch the whole thing up. What are people going to think of me if I botch the whole thing up? I'm going to get fired from my job. What am I going to do if I get fired from my job? I'm going to wind up on the streets. Which street am I going to sit on? You know? And our mind just, you know, we're taking the ball and creating a horror story, aren't we? Yeah. And so all this are, you know, our thoughts, uncontrolled thoughts, and we're looking for happiness, but we're going about it in the wrong way. Okay? When I get anxious, I don't know about you, but when I get anxious and I look at the stories my mind is making up about what's going to happen. When I'm in the midst of the anxiety, I'm sure all of those horrible things are going to happen. Without a doubt. They're all going to happen. When I come out of the period of anxiety and I look at what I thought was going to happen, I laugh. Do you ever laugh at yourself? Yeah? We are sometimes really funny, the way our mind thinks. I think we really have to laugh at ourselves and laugh at how silly our mind can be. Now, making these stories up that we really believe when we're in the middle of them. But when we have even a little bit of space from them, they seem really rather silly. And then we have to laugh, okay? But we need to get that space to see them. Yeah. It's funny because usually when we're in school, we think, you know, when it comes to English class and creative writing, most of us feel like, you know, I can't do it very well. But actually, if we look at our minds, we are doing creative writing stories day in and day out. You know, we are writing stories in our mind with our imagination about things that have not happened, many of which will never happen, but we're writing stories about them. And you know what's fascinating about it? All the stories, who is the main character? Who is the star of our melodramas? Yeah? Me? No, I'm the star of these amazing stories, you know? Sometimes it's a melodrama, sometimes it's a soap opera, sometimes it's a regular drama, you know? Sometimes I get into a sci-fi thing. But our mind is making up these amazing stories and then getting anxious about all these things. Yeah? Have you ever noticed that when you get anxious? Does your mind do that? Yeah? Does your mind do that? My mind does. A few years ago, actually 6 years ago, I began a Buddhist abbey in the U.S. This is my anxiety story, you know, true confessions. So, you know, I've been a nun since I was in my 20s. I've never owned anything, you know, never owned a car, never owned a house. And here we are with the donations that other people have given us, buying 240 acres of land with a house and a mortgage. Yeah, and so it's huge, and it's not my money, it's the money other people have given me because they think that the project is good, so I have this incredible responsibility to these people. And so I move in there, it's this big house. There's three of us, me and two cats. Okay, we are the original residents of the abbey. And I remember sitting there, you know, sitting there in the evening, it's quiet, we're out in the middle of nowhere, and going, what have I done? You know? There's me and two cats, and we used other people's kind donations, and how, there's so much work to do, and how am I going to do it all? And who's going to come? And how in the world are we going to pay off this mortgage? And I could get myself really revved up, you know? Really, like, talk about anxiety. And then I would kind of get, you know, to this incredible anxious state, you know, the money, the people, my reputation, you know, everything's gonna fall apart. And then I would just have to say, relax, children. You know, you can't control everything. You can't control everything. You can do one thing at a time, you do what you can, and wait and see what happens. Because that's all I could realistically do. Yeah, I'm one person, I can't do the work of 15 people, I do what I can do, see who else comes. If the garden is overgrown, it is overgrown. The world is not going to collapse. Yeah? If, you know, the downstairs isn't finished because we had to do all this sheetrocking and everything, if it's not finished, it's not finished. The world's going to keep turning. Now, all I can do is what I'm capable of doing, one step at a time. And I might as well relax and just do that. And so I kind of had a little talk with myself. And then I would do a Buddhist practice that we call taking refuge, where we turn to the Buddha as our teacher, the Dharma as the path to enlightenment, and the Sangha as those who have who are following the path and who have gained realizations of it. And I just turned for refuge and said, you know, please help me to keep my mind calm and clear and to do the best I can and to be satisfied with that. And so, you know, that is what I would do, and then I'd go to sleep, and then I'd wake up the next morning and start with, what is step one to do today? Yeah, there's 1,000 steps, true. I'm not going to get them all done today. Probably not in a few months. But what's the most important one? What's the one I start with today? And then where do I go from there? And then just do that and be satisfied. And so that's how I practiced. That's how I dealt with my anxiety in that situation. Yeah. And 6 years later, we have many residents, or at least we have 9 times as many as we had when we started. That's a pretty good increase, isn't it? Yeah. And we have people coming there. We have programs. We actually paid off the mortgage within a year. You know, I thought, how are we ever going to do this? You know, how are we ever going to make a monthly payment? We paid it off within a year. All my anxiety was for nothing. Yeah? And, you know, so it was a very good training practice for me in really understanding I cannot control the universe. All I can do is deal with my own mind and do the best I can and be satisfied with what I'm doing. Okay? And I think that's really a key, is to learn to be satisfied with what we do. My first teacher was Lama Yeshe. Where's Lama's photo? Huh? In the very back, on this side. Okay, anyway. So Lama, he used to call everybody dear. Okay? And he had these little pith sayings that he would say to us. And one of them was, good enough, dear. Yeah. All sorts of different things would happen, and he would say, good enough, dear. That's good enough, dear. And to me, you know, those three words, I mean, I may have forgotten all the other teachings he gave, but I remembered three words. And it's, you know, really served me very, very well over the years. Because these three words will come to my mind very often when my mind is anxious. You know, good enough, dear. That is good enough, dear. Because my mind wants everything to be perfect immediately. Yeah. Not just immediately. I want it to be perfect yesterday, so that it's already perfect and we're behind schedule. Okay? So this perfectionist mind is a source of anxiety, isn't it? When we have these, you know, we want everything to be perfect, then we get so anxious. And when we can just say, good enough, dear, to ourselves, you know, it is good enough, isn't it? It doesn't have to be perfect. In fact, I think it's very good if we question what our idea of perfection is. I don't know about you, but you know what my idea, what my definition is of perfection is? Is everything happens the way I want it to happen. That's perfection. Is that your definition of perfection? Yeah? Everything happens the way I want it to happen. If that happens, then it's perfect. Okay? Forget the fact that other people want to have it to happen differently. You know? They want imperfect things. Yeah, they don't know what real perfection is. You know, perfection is my way, not their way. They're wrong. I'm right. Perfection is my way. And then getting anxious because things aren't perfect. But where does the definition of perfection come from? It's not being imposed on me from outside. Yeah, nobody else is saying, children, you should be perfect, and perfection means da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, my whole notion of perfection is coming from in here. Yeah, maybe some of it was conditioned by what my parents said, what my teacher said, what society said. But the important thing is I bought into it, and so now it's coming from me. It's not coming from outside. Okay? And then, so I have this idea of perfection, self-invented. And then I feel like I can't make it perfect, can't control everything. So then I get anxious. Or alternatively, for variety, I get depressed. You know? This kind of the way our mind is. Can you laugh about this? Yeah, can you laugh about it? Because, you know, sometimes we're so stuck in our moods that we can't laugh at how our own mind works. And yet it's hilarious when we watch it. It is, isn't it? You know? The world is supposed to happen the way I think it should happen, and it's not. And I can't control it, and I should be able to control it. You know, forget the fact that God can't control it, and Buddha can't control it. I should be able to control the world and make everything be the way I want it to be. And I can't. Pretty silly, isn't it? Isn't that a silly way of thinking? I think it's hilarious, you know? And so here's where that little phrase of good enough, dear, I think is really helpful, because it cuts through that. Yeah, it cuts through that perfectionism and all those control issues and those proliferating thoughts I was talking about. And it's just, what this is good enough. Because, you know, what is. We can't change what is. We can only change the future. What is, right? Isn't it? The present, it's happening. Can you change the present? The present already has come into being. We can't change it. We can only change the future. So we might as well accept the present. Considering we can't change the present, we might as well accept it. We can try and change the future. Okay? But if we fight with the present, if we fight with what is at this very moment, where's that going to get us? If we reject the reality of what's happening right now, where's that going to get us? Okay? So, are you with me in seeing that the present has occurred and we can't change it? All we can do, we can either fight it or we can accept it. We can look in the future, and the future we can take steps to change. Okay? But the future hasn't happened yet, so we shouldn't spend too much time there. Okay? But if we can learn to be content with the present, that's good enough, dear. Then the future can unfold in a very natural way. Whereas when we fight with the present and we don't accept the reality of what's happening now, then we get so tight mentally, and that mental tightness really messes up the future. Is that your experience? Yeah? It's my experience anyway. So to just say, what's happening is good enough. And very often, if we really sit down and look at it, it is good enough. I mean, we're alive and we're breathing, right? We're comparatively safe. We have friends. We've eaten. Things are not as bad as our creative writing story mind can make them out to be. Another thing that I've noticed with my creative writing anxious mind is not only does it create worst case scenarios, but it also says there's nothing that can be done about them. Okay? So this very hopeless, fatalistic thing, you know, this horrible thing is going to happen, and there's nothing, I have no resources to deal with it. Yeah, no resources. But when I stop and ask myself, first of all, how likely is it that this drama I'm writing is going to happen to start with? Okay, how likely is it going to happen? You know, when we're anxious, most of the dramas are not going to happen. Some will, but most of them won't. So it's going to be the worst case scenario, and I have no resources. Yeah, I'm like completely, the situation's hopeless. There's nothing I can do when this horrible thing happens. And then I stop and I ask myself, is that true that I have no resources? And whenever I do that and look at the situation, I always find there are resources. You know, there are people that will help me. That my mind is that is saying, nobody's gonna help me, nobody's gonna see how much pain I'm in, nobody's gonna care about my tragedy, that mind actually is wrong. And that there's lots of people who will come and help. And there's social services, and there's lots of things that can help me, even if that horrible thing happens. And not only are there external resources, but I have internal resources. I'm not a hopeless basket case. Now, I do have some internal strength. I do have some ability to deal with my mind. This situation, even if it happens, it's not hopeless. There's internal resources in me, there's external resources in the environment, and there's no reason to feel so tight about this, because there is something that can be done. And probably the situation won't happen anyway. Getting it? Yeah? So we need to take control of our mind and not let these proliferating garbage thoughts create a disaster that hasn't happened yet and is unlikely to happen. And even if it does happen, there are things to do about it. Okay? So instead of wasting so much of our life energy on that, you know, let's instead steer our life energy into something that's useful. Yeah. You might say, what's useful? Well, how about helping somebody else? Is helping somebody else something that could be useful? It could be useful to them. Could helping somebody else also help you? Yeah? I think helping other people also helps us. Hmm? One time when I was in Israel, I met a one of the Israeli therapists there, and he practiced what he called mitzvah therapy. Mitzvah in Hebrew means a good deed. Okay, to do a good deed. And so his whole philosophy was, if you open your eyes and do something kind towards somebody else, it's therapeutic for yourself. And I think this is really true, you know, that the more we're able to open our eyes and see what's going on with other people and reach out to them with love and compassion, even doing small deeds. We don't need to think of doing, you know, Nobel Peace Prize winning deeds. Just even small things that are within our capability. Doing these things can benefit others and benefit ourselves. Now you might wonder why. Well, think about the anxious mind and the depressed mind. Okay? What kind of thoughts are going on in anxiety? What kind of thoughts are going on in depression? Who's the star character of our anxiety and our depression? Who is center stage? Hello? Who is center stage? Me! Right? I am center stage in this anxiety drama. I am center stage in my depression drama. Okay. I am the center of the universe. You see, these minds are very deceptive. Depression, anxiety, fear, you know, guilt. These minds are very, very deceptive because they make us the center of the universe. Yeah. Are we the center of the universe? Sorry. You know, when I look, it's like, oh, you're not the center of the universe. Too bad, kiddo. You know? But actually, it's quite a relief not to be the center of the universe. Yeah? Because this negative way of making ourselves the center of the universe keeps us twirling around anxiety, guilt, fear, depression, anxiety, guilt, fear, depression. When we stop being the center of the universe and open our eyes and see that there's so many living beings who want to be happy as intensely as we want to be happy, who want to avoid suffering as much as we want to avoid suffering, and we turn our attention to them and we do even small things to be of service and benefit, even small things to connect with somebody else who needs some connection, then we benefit not only them, but we benefit ourselves. And we find that our own heart starts to open up. Yeah. It's really something miraculous if you practice this. Yeah. Because if we look at, let's say, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, you know, talk about, I mean, he would have a good reason to be depressed. Yeah? Think about his life, okay? He was placed in charge of the government of a country at age 15. And think about that. How would you like being, Prime Minister of Australia at 15 years old? What do you think? Yeah? Think that's a good situation? That's the situation he was in. Then, you know, the Chinese communists are trying to, overrun his country. He's in charge, trying to deal with it. Winds up at age 24, having to flee for his life, crossing the Himalaya Mountains in March, when it's freezing cold, going down into the Indian Plateau, you know, where there's all sorts of bacteria and viruses that the body up in Tibet has never been exposed to. No. And becoming a refugee, he hasn't been able to return to his own country in 51 years now. All of his property in the Potala was confiscated. Yeah. There's been genocide in his country, nuclear dumping in Tibet, deforestation. You know, tens of thousands of his people have had to come over and go into exile. That would be a life to get angry, to get either angry or anxious or depressed about, don't you think? If you had that kind of life, you'd say, oh, if somebody's depressed after that happened, yeah, I can understand why. Is His Holiness Dalai Lama depressed? No. Yeah. He's been to Australia. Have some of you been to see him? Yeah? You know he's not depressed, is he? He's a very happy individual. Now, what is it that enables him to be happy after having a life with that kind of tragedy in it? What is it? Yeah? I think it's his practice of love and compassion. By not making himself the center of the universe and really looking at others and really caring about others, you know, genuinely caring about others, because they want to be as happy as much as we do. They want to avoid suffering as much as we do. And so because he has that thought in his mind all the time, you know, and then the thought in his mind is, how can I be a benefit? How can I be a benefit? Then that makes the mind very happy. Yeah. Because he doesn't expect himself to be able to solve all the problems. He's trying to be a benefit, but he knows he's not going to be able to fix everybody's problem. But he's content with being able to do what he's capable of doing. And that works. And so he's a happy individual. Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. And when you're with His Holiness, it's like whoever he is with, he's 100% with that person. His mind is not, you know, somewhere else worrying about something. Okay? His mind is like whoever he's with that person. And he relates from the heart to whatever person is in front of his nose. You know, without the mind having all these namtok proliferating, you know, thoughts going all over the place that destroy the happiness of just being right there with whoever he's with. Okay? And when he's with somebody, he's not in his mind going, I wish I were with somebody else. Yeah, like us. We're talking to one person, and it's like, I want to be with somebody else. Yeah. Then we talk to that person. Oh, I want to be back with this person. Okay. And so His Holiness isn't like that. Whoever he's with, he's really content with that person. Yeah. And I've seen some people be with His Holiness, and, you know, I have a very critical mind, and I look, who do these people think they are acting this way in front of the Dalai Lama? It's like, these people are so arrogant, they're so stuck up. You know, you see what my mind's like. yeah. But His Holiness, he doesn't see that. You know, I'm looking at these people, that one's so stuck up, that one's arrogant, how dare they act that way? His Holiness doesn't see that. Whoever he's with, he just appreciates that person for whoever he is. He doesn't have that judgmental, critical mind. And then the next person he's with, he appreciates that person, you know, for whoever they are. So what I'm getting at is that our happiness and our suffering come from our mind. Okay? They come from our own mind. And so if we want to be happy and if we want to avoid suffering, we have to learn to transform our own mind and to learn how to develop a kind heart that genuinely cares about others. And to learn to be satisfied and say to ourselves, good enough, dear. And to feel good about that. Okay? And nobody else can change our minds. Now, you can hire somebody to clean your house. You can hire somebody to mow your lawn. You can hire somebody to run an errand for you. Can you hire somebody to eat so you won't be hungry? Can you hire somebody to sleep because you don't have time to do it? That would be a great job, wouldn't it? Yeah, so he goes, I don't have time to sleep. Here, I'll pay $100, go to sleep for me so I feel rested. What a job. But, you know, we don't have that job. Okay. And so, in the same way as eating, sleeping, these things we have to do ourselves, so it is that transforming our own mind is something that we have to do. Nobody else can do it for us. But we can do it. And we have the capability to do it. And there are the tools to do it. There is a path to follow to do this. So the situation is not hopeless. Yeah? There are tools, and we can learn them, we can practice them, we can actualize them and transform our lives in that way. When my mind is depressed, when I hear that, I say, yes, but. Do you find your mind saying that? Yes, that sounds very good, but. I think those two words in conjunction, that phrase, yes, but, should be banned. It's one of the most detrimental phrases that we come up with. Okay? As soon as you hear yourself say, yes, but, realize that we're limiting our own possibilities when we do that. As soon as we say, yes, but, we are closing things off, assuming the rest of the world doesn't understand us. So ban yes buts, okay? Ban them. And know that you can do something really good with your life and that you have the ability to change your mind and change your experience. Okay. So what I'd like to do now is leave some time. You can ask some questions or make comments, and we can have a little bit of an exchange. Yes. Okay, so the situation is a person who suffers from depression and anxiety has gone to the doctor, has been prescribed a drug that has freed her of the depression and the anxiety, but a side effect has been that she's lost her creativity and she now can't sleep well because she's having nightmares. So she's trying to see which is the lesser of two evils. Well, I can't say that I can give somebody else advice on how to run their life. But I can say that we can try, in whichever situation she chooses, to keep a positive state of mind. You know, there's good and bads about either thing, but whichever thing, to keep a positive state of mind and to work with the things, you know, like if she chooses to go off the drug and has the depression and anxiety, to learn how to work with those in her life and how to think in another way so she can counteract those moods. Or if she chooses to stay on the drug and she has the nightmare and lose her creativity, well, the creativity to just accept that and maybe find that there's some other ways to be creative that she hasn't found yet. And with the nightmares, to learn to relax her mind, you know, and to, especially before you go to bed, to try and have a thought of loving kindness. Try and have a positive thought before you go to bed, because that influences how you sleep the whole night. And I find it very helpful before I go to bed to imagine that I'm putting my head in the Buddha's lap, because the Buddha's sitting there so peaceful and kind. If you look at this, one of the figures of the Buddha, you know, he's just so peaceful. It's like nothing disturbs the peace in the Buddha's mind. And so I just think I'd put my head in his lap, and this very gentle light is coming and filling my body, and I go to bed with that kind of thought, okay? Or sometimes before I go to bed, because often at the end of the day, I don't know about you, but I'm tired and I just like collapse in bed. But then I say, and I just feel how good it feels to lie down after, you know, being so busy during the day. But then I say, may all living beings, may all people have a nice, comfortable bed to lie down in. You know, I'm so incredibly fortunate. I have a comfortable bed. I'm in a place of safety. There's people in this planet who are in a war zone, and when they go to bed, they're terrified. And there's kids in this planet who go to bed hungry. And I'm not going to bed hungry. I'm not going to bed scared. You know, I have this incredible luxury of, you know, feeling safe, feeling comfortable. And may all living beings have that. And I'll really spend some time before I fall asleep really wishing that all the people who don't have that could have that, and sending, you know, the happiness I have from it, imagine giving it to them, and then falling asleep with that kind of, you know, thought. And that also prevents nightmares. Yeah. Okay, so she's saying, can I talk about fear? Because she's very afraid of losing her children. All other things, you know, if you lose them, that's okay, but the idea of losing your children is just, it's too much. Yeah. My mom used to say that to me. I actually found it a little bit burdensome, you know? Gee, you know, Mom, if something happens to me, I don't want you to go wacko, you know? Just kind of relax, chill out, Mom, it's okay. Yeah. You know, with that kind of fear, again, you know, we have no control over the future. We don't know what's going to happen. Your kids have their own karma. You can't control it. And life continues. Yeah. I'm not saying you're going to lose your kids, but what I'm saying is life continues no matter what happens. Yeah. And so sometimes we may, again, dream up this worst case scenario and think that there's no possible way I can endure this. But you know, human beings are remarkably resilient. And many of the psychologists have done studies about this, and they found that when people think of the most horrible thing that can happen, that even if that thing happens, they rebound from it. Yeah? And so I think rather than be afraid of losing your kids, enjoy them while they're here. Because whether how, you know, I mean, eventually they're going to move out of the house, aren't they? You know, you're going to lose them one way or another because they're going to move out of the house, unless you want them when they're 40 years old staying with you. You know, I think by that time it's like, you're going to be, look, go away. Go away. I'm fine by myself. Move out. I don't need to see you every day. Do your own laundry. <laughs> You know? <laughs> Yeah? And so someday or another, there's going to be separation. But, you know, while they're there, enjoy them. And then just let the future take care of itself. Yeah? Yeah. Could you speak a little louder? Okay, so your question is that you find it comparatively easy to be kind to others, but you feel very empty in yourself. And you can give love and kindness to others, but giving love and kindness to yourself is quite difficult. And that sometimes it's almost as if you're taking care of others as a way to avoid looking at yourself, but then sometimes the whole thing catches up to you and the things you're running away from are like plop in front of you. And so how do you deal with that? Yeah. It's a very good question. We have to remember that in Buddhism, when we talk about love and compassion, it's for all sentient beings. So that means each one. It doesn't mean all sentient beings minus one. The one being ourself. Okay? It doesn't mean that we're Pollyanna, you know, taking care of everybody else, but neglecting ourselves. I think it's very important to see our own inner beauty and to know, first of all, that just by having this precious human life, having met the Buddha's teaching and having the opportunity to practice, this is a result of having accumulated so much positive karma, done so many good deeds in a previous life, just to get the opportunity that we have right now. So to put ourselves down and tell ourselves we're incapable is completely wrong. Because we clearly did some things incredible, you know, to have the opportunity we have with this life to practice. So we shouldn't put ourselves down. Yeah. And the fact that we're attracted to the Buddha's teachings, you know, that shows that there's really something virtuous inside of us. The fact that we want to develop love and compassion for others, you know, shows that there's some goodness inside of us. The fact that we aspire to understand the nature of reality and to develop our ability to be a benefit, it shows that there's, you know, definitely some goodness in us and good qualities. And we can't neglect that and ignore it. Those qualities are there. Okay? And to look and say, everybody else has those qualities, but I don't. I'm empty or I'm a disaster. That's totally wrong. Yeah? It's really deprecating what is there. It's ignoring the reality of our own inner human beauty. Okay? So I think, you know, sometimes we're so afraid that if we acknowledge our own potential, and if we acknowledge our own goodness, that we're going to become conceited or arrogant or something like that. Being conceited and arrogant is very different than having respect and compassion for ourselves. Okay, can you see a difference between those? I mean, respect for our own good qualities, compassion, wanting ourselves to be free of suffering, those are realistic, you know, attitudes. Yeah. Being arrogant is making up some story about being somebody we aren't. Yeah. So don't get those things confused, thinking that if I like myself, I'm doing something wrong. Yeah, that's not the case. Yeah, and we should like ourselves. I mean, we live with ourselves 24/7. We might as well enjoy our own company, don't you think? Yeah? I mean, let's enjoy our own company and see our own goodness and encourage ourselves and keep developing our own goodness and keep practicing in that way. And the same love and care that you give to others, give to yourself. You're a worthwhile human being. Take care of yourself. Okay?
In the middle of the night.
Oh, okay. So you get up in the middle of the night and you're anxious?
Well, I don't get up.
You lie down and you're anxious. Okay. Okay, so what to do in the middle of the night when you get anxious? Okay. I think the middle of the night is so peaceful. Where's the anxiety coming from? What's feeding the anxiety in the middle of the night? How do you know you're anxious?
How do I know?
Yeah, what?
I'm awake.
Being awake equals being anxious? Okay, but what else is going on?
Sometimes it might be a dream when I wake up.
Might be a what? Dream.
Dream.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A dream is just a dream. Yeah. Not real. I think when we have anxiety or fear when we wake up with them, like especially if it's from a bad dream, to just remember it's a dream, it's not real. Yeah, we don't need to get involved with it. And this practice of taking refuge I mentioned before, that's a very good practice to do if you wake up with a nightmare, is to take refuge. And also, I think generating thoughts of loving kindness are a very good way to handle anxiety in the middle of the night. Yeah. So turn the mind to sending out thoughts of loving kindness to others. You can think of all the other people who are up at 3 o'clock in the morning, because there's a lot of them. Yeah? And send them some loving kindness. And imagine them feeling safe and their minds being pacified and smooth and gentle so that they can fall back asleep feeling safe. Okay? So generate that kind of loving kindness and send those thoughts out to other people. Because there's a lot of people who can use them. I do work with inmates in prisons, and often they write letters to thank me for what I do, but actually I thank them for what they do because they help me much more than I help them. And in situations like what you're speaking of, what I would do is think of the people who are incarcerated and what their lives are like, and send them some loving kindness because it's really rotten being incarcerated. And I think of people in other countries who are political prisoners and incarcerated, you know, and send them loving kindness. And think of people in hospitals and send them loving kindness. And so this whole way of thinking kind thoughts and sending them out to others is a very, very good way, I think, to deal with anxiety, whether it's in the middle of the night or during the day. Will you try it? Thank you. Okay, let's sit quietly now. So we'll just sit a couple of minutes. Yeah, you can think about something we talked about during these few minutes, or you can come back to your breath as you wish. And then rejoice that we were all able to be here this evening and share the evening together, thinking about something that's very worthwhile. And rejoice at all the positive energy we created as individuals and as a group. Of all the kindness we generated this evening, of all the new ideas we got and enthusiasm we generated. And let's dedicate all this good energy so that it will ripen and bring about good results for all living beings. So you can imagine this good energy that we created this evening as a ball of light in the center of your chest. And that light radiates out to everybody. People in the room, in the city, the country, the world. And imagine that this light of the good energy that we created with our good motivation this evening reaches out to all living beings and touches them and brings them peace and fulfillment in their own minds. And feel really connected to all these other living beings as you send them out, send out to them all this positive energy that we've created together. Okay. So tomorrow we'll talk about joy and courage and continue this discussion. So have a good evening. Try tomorrow morning when you wake up. Try an experiment before you even get out of bed. And when you first wake up, think, today as much as possible, I'm not going to harm anybody. Today as much as possible, I'm going to be kind and be a benefit. And today I'm going to hold my spiritual motivation of love and compassion as the precious thing that's going to sustain me from now until I reach enlightenment. Okay, so try generating those three thoughts: not harm, benefit, and to hold our spiritual motivation of loving kindness and altruism. And consciously make that the first thing you think about in the morning. And then see how the rest of the day goes. okay? Hasta mañana.